Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Murphy.
Hello.
And Tiffany Pearsall. How you doing, Tiffany Pearsall? How's that hot dog?
I'm great. I just finished a hot dog that was delivered to me by Grandpa Gooby, and I'm feeling energized.
Hey, anybody that gets a grandpa to deliver them a hot dog is, I mean, that's a good living there. I mean, if you got a grandpa delivering hot dogs to you, what more could you ask in life?
Right? I'm living the best life.
So today, for this episode, we're going to break down a little early learning term of art. Well, it's not an early learning term of art. It's a poker playing term of art. And I mean, a term of art, just those shorthand bits of terminology that they use in different professions. Some of them that we've talked about here before are things like craptivities, the paper plate fish, that kind of stuff. Glurpees, the scourge of all early learning programs, where you get you combine glitter and herpes and you get the disease of glurpees. Things like worksheets instead of worksheets. One that former podcast host Danita Dinger came up with that I really like is plopping. Those kind of things. And so this term is on tilt.
Even poopy face.
Poopy face, play face. All of these are just kind of shorthand terms that people can use to among peers to refer to different situations and things. And so when I discovered that needs to become an early learning turn of phrase is on tilt. Now, this is a term that came apparently from professional poker. It's when a poker player kind of loses their cool. They get kind of overly emotional because they're losing or because they're winning, and their game is thrown off. And I thought this really sounded like something that happens to early learning people, whether you show up for work after having a bad day or you're all excited about your weekend coming up on a Friday afternoon. You can kind of go on tilt and let the emotional state take over and impact the way you're doing the job. So I think it applies to caregivers, but I think it also is a good shorthand for referring to what's going on with children sometimes when they become because emotions are so new to them and so kind of hard to manage when they're young, it can become something that refers to what they're dealing with. Timothy was really on tilt after Samantha knocked down his block building, that kind of stuff. So I thought we could just kick it around a little bit, not just this term, but maybe the whole idea of having these bits of shorthand in our profession to kind of convey information to our peers and coworkers.
Yeah, I like the I had not heard of the phrase term of art.
Term of art must be a term of term of art.
I had never ever heard that before. Turn of phrase, I have heard. Soundbite, I have heard. Sometimes I'll reduce it to an ism phrase. You know, it's like a something, I just say it. It might be overly dramatic or very overly general, but it paints a picture, a very clear picture of what's going on. The thing I appreciated about your article, though, Jeff, specifically on tilt is that it's not always negative. And I think by saying on tilt, it's keeping it out of a positive or negative camp right away. Like it allows for some more perhaps clarification. Like if I got mad because the tower got knocked over, oh, he's so mad right now. Like that could just me making that statement could influence how everybody else is now going to interact with that child. Whereas if I just say on tilt, like that could mean something different to other listeners and observers of me using that statement as well. I liked how open-ended yet specific it was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of, it's not positive or negative. It's just kind of emotionally charged and off balance. When I was looking into the term, I played a lot of pinball back in my misspent youth, part of it before things like Pong and Mrs. Pac-Man were big parts of the world, where we just played with old-fashioned pinball machines, and you could tilt the pinball machine when you're trying to kind of using some a little bit of body language to kind of move the machine just a little bit to get the ball to go where you want. If you moved it too far, it would throw the machine off balance and it would tilt. And so I'm sure that's probably where the poker players got the term from. And I guess the phrase is also being used in professional gaming, because I guess if you're playing, I don't know the names of any video games from the last 20 years. I think
World of Warcraft.
Okay.
Overwatch.
Okay. So I guess if you're
also highly competitive one.
Your laser blaster isn't killing the zombies right. I guess that's what you do in video games. You might go on tilt a little bit in those kind of situations as well. So I just think it's maybe a term that we could import.
Quite honestly, in addition to perhaps unpacking it, I think this could be, this pod episode is like that you're, it's like a debutante being, you are introducing this new phrase to the early childhood community as something to start playing with, and maybe see how often are you seeing evidence of this where you could organically use this phrase.
Well, yeah, because we are the move makers and trendsetters of the early learning world. So, I mean, what better place to debut a new term? Yeah, there comes on tilt walking down the, I'm guessing, open stairway in its ball gown. Is that what you do?
Right.
Sure.
Everybody's jockeying to dance with him or her. I don't,
I love this phrase. I immediately want to use it all the time. I think it fills a need I didn't even know I had to complement the phrase of being triggered. When you think about, and that triggered has such a negative connotation.
Yeah.
That you don't ever talk about kids being triggered or adults being triggered by, like, hey, I'm having all these great things happening and I feel invincible. I can totally make that leap. And like, that's the moment when you crash your face or whatever. But like, it happens on the positive end of the spectrum too. That's why I really like the phrase, is that it's not necessarily negative.
Yeah, I think in the article I put together, the example I used is like a little girl's on tilt because grandma's picking her up to go to the zoo. And we've all experienced that child that is just so hyped up with happiness and joy that they become a little bit hard to handle, a little bit...
They need more room.
Yeah.
They need a little more room.
Yeah, they're not the version of themselves that you're used to because of all that positive energy that's flowing through them. And I mean, that those kind of things happen all the time. And I mean, there are plenty of experiences where it's the negative thing. They're on tilt because mom and dad were fighting all weekend, or because they're hungry, or whatever it is. But it's just an easy phrase to use I got to get Johnny some Cheerios. He's on tilt because he missed breakfast this morning. That kind of thing.
Yeah. I realized as I was reading the article that my family had actually created their own version of this. So like in our family, we already had a working phrase that meant the same thing. Probably a little bit more on the negative, not in a bad way, but like it was the toddler pool. If you were able to self-profess, I'm in the toddler pool, everybody kind of knew you need a wide berth because for whatever reason, they're either upset, they're frustrated, they're in a quiet zone. It just kind of meant I'm not my usual self. It could mean 99 different things. But yeah. I would honestly say I never ever pronounced I was in the toddler pool because I was happy. Maybe distracted, which isn't necessarily negative, but I wouldn't have said toddler pool, but the toddler pool was so much a part of my traveling life that actually in the B terminal at Chicago O'Hare Airport, if back in the day when you would check in on Facebook, you can actually check into the toddler pool. just for the listeners who find themselves on tilt in a Chicago O'Hare Airport, you can let the world know.
Love it. Love it.
Cool. So did we beat this horse to death?
I feel like we've barely begun to beat the horse, but at the same time, it's such a concise terminology.
Well, I suppose we could spend some time on the value of having this kind of shorthand with peers in the classroom, because I mean, when
can we share other, what did you call them? They have terms of art that we have in our lives. Now that I have a word for this, I have a lot of them in my life. I didn't know that's what they were.
Yeah. Cool. What do you got?
One I use a lot is The Right Number of Elephants. Have you ever read that kid's book, The Right Number of Elephants?
No.
Tell us what that one means.
So in the book, I got to explain the story first. In the book, you start with 10 elephants and it's like, if you need somebody to help stop a runaway train, you need 9 elephants. If you need somebody to put on socks on an angry spider, you need 8 elephants, you know, and it goes down. If you need a friend, all you need is 1 elephant. And so we talk about the right number of elephants being like either the right number of kids to have this project work, or the right amount of stuff, the right number of teachers, just the right number of elephants, man. And the one that's been coming up due to COVID a lot is what's like the right number of elephants to have a classroom that has enough kids to function, like beyond the numbers and the money and all that, but like how many kids do you need to have a bonded group? And it's been interesting to know.
How many is it?
I think it's 9 is 9? The right number. 9 minimum. Yeah.
9 including adult elephants or 9 child?
9 children.
9 children. Mm-hmm. When you started talking, Tiffany, I was reminded of the spoons concept. I don't have enough spoons for that today, which was new to me, but my sister uses it a lot. And so I Googled it and, of course, found the initial blog post about, you know, I'm out of spoons. I just can't. No more spoons to give. My brother is a little more crass. He says he's got no more fucks to give, but I think potentially it means exactly. Jeff, you're nodding in agreement here. But it means the same thing, right? I'm saturated. I got nothing left today.
Yeah.
I actually have right next to the drawer with the spoons in it in the kitchen. We have a drawer full of fucks. So we keep it.
Sorry, no more fucks. We're fresh out of fucks.
To me, it's slightly different than in chemistry. They call it the limiting factor, where like you're baking cookies, and if you only have a quarter cup of chocolate chips, then you can only make so many chocolate chip cookies. This is like the opposite of that, though. This is like, how many maximum do you need? It's just like, instead of the smallest amount, how many is the biggest amount? What's the right number of elephants here?
Well, there's not a maximum amount of, well, now you're saying there could be a maximum amount of chocolate chips and chocolate chip cookies?
No. If you only have on hand, if I only have a quarter cup of chocolate chips left for whatever reason, and that's a whole other right? Like, who the hell allowed that to happen? But if that's all I have left in the bag, it's going to determine how many cookies I'm able to make, which is more like the spoons. I think that's more, would you call that a deficit kind of model? I don't know. I don't like that phrase.
It's just the like,
What did you call it in chemistry? What was the phrase in chemistry? The
limiting factor.
That's what, that works for me. The limiting factor.
That's like the bottom line. For me, the right number of elephants is like, where's the ideal line? So in the chocolate chip analogy, it's like, well, how many chips do you actually want per cookie?
Exactly.
What would make that, what's that right number of elephants? Not like, well, we only have this many, so we can
only make 5 cookies.
Exactly. It's like, in the best world, how many chips would you have per bite? And for me, that's 2 chips per bite.
2 chips per bite. How many bites per cookie?
8.
8 bites.
Depends on how big the cookie is.
Okay, I was thinking.
If it's too big, then the middle's not going to be done the right. If it's too small, then it's going to be crunchy. See what I mean? It's like, it's the elephants are the top level ideal. spoons at the bottom level, minimum.
Saying 16 chips per cookie?
Yeah.
Huh.
I like a low chip ratio. I don't love chocolate.
Well, no, you can't have too many chips. Yeah. I was thinking 12 to 14 chips per cookie, but I mean, for me, that's a 1.5 bites. So that's
so they're tiny little brown cookies.
Yeah, no, they're.
I want a big cookie that I can like really have.
Yeah, like I said, 1.5 bites. That's yeah. I mean, we could spend a whole other episode on the milk dipping aspects of cookie eating. Might have to come back with a whole mini series on cookie eating. Cookies. So
I have another one that we just made up this week. Can I share it with you?
Yeah, go ahead.
We just made it up this week, and it's a 90-degree turn. Is our phrase for it. So when you think about making changes in your classroom, it's like, let's do this 180. We're going to convert everything to play. But like once you live something for a while, sometimes you have to change things only a little bit to make it function perfectly. So we're calling that the 90-degree turn. And it came from, I have like a rack that we put the dishes on, and it's a rectangle, not a square. And the orientation of that rack meant that we had to always move all the brooms and everything every time we wanted to take the bus tub of dishes out. And it took me a whole freaking year to turn that rectangle the other direction so we could slide it in and out. And it's like, it's not for any reason. It's just like, oh, this is the day I realized I could solve this problem. And all it took was this 90-degree turn.
Cool. I like that one.
That's our phrase for that now.
Another one I wrote up, it's got to be about a year ago now, on the Playvolution site is Playngry. It's the playing and being angry, because, and that grew off of Playface, because, you know, there's the whole Playface thing with the wide eyes and the open face and that invitation to play that you can read on people's faces. But a lot of times kids, when they're being superheroes or the bad guy, they try to cover up the Playface. So they're playing at being angry, although they're still playing. So Playngry has been the term I've been using to refer to that. So that kind of falls in between Playface and I want to eat you face is the Playngry face.
Mm-hmm. We do that one a lot. We like to be tigers in our room and Playngry. Yep.
Oh, another
sometimes
one.
I think these come out of things that are unique to that specific group, and not even maybe turns of phrase, but just like silly phrases, right? It could be just a word that becomes unique to that group. I'm also thinking that might not last, whereas like the 90 degree turn tilt could last. There I think are also ones that are specific just to that particular group of kids, and then teachers get an emotional connection to that, and then they try and make them happen with the next group of kids,
and it doesn't work. Most famous one of those is egg salad sandwich. And that's basically when the entire group is on tilt at once due to hilarity. We're feeling like an egg salad sandwich. It hasn't ever worked with another group since that summer. But that was just like the thing that always put them over the edge. You just had to say egg salad sandwich. And then like the whole rest of the day was on tilt.
I think one of the benefits of terms of art is it kind of gives you membership to the in-group.
I would agree with that to the
crowd, and there's a value in that, to feel that you're part of you're part of the team, you're part of the group, you're part of the profession, you're part of the guild. That kind of thing is kind of a valuable feeling to have. And so when you're using these terms that only other people that do the same thing use, or other people in your group use, it's kind of a
bonding
valuable thing. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's reinforcing the connections between the people, almost like an inside joke even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think another one we might've coined here on the show, maybe we used it other places, but we did a series of episodes, shit we saw on Pinterest, where we just kind of bitched about things we saw on Pinterest. And we came up, I think we started using the term paniculum. That's a curriculum that grows off of Pinterest, the paniculum.
I had forgotten about that.
It doesn't really roll off the tongue, but it really tells you exactly what you're referring to. It's all the stuff made out of toilet paper tubes and paper plates, and that becomes your curriculum. So that shorthand is also valuable. And I mean, again, not having to waste a lot of time explaining what's going on to the other adult on the other side of the room when you can say it very concisely in one or two words that mean the same thing to both of you, it really helps you respond to situations more efficiently and quickly and gets everybody on the same page a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think there is still room occasionally to check in and make sure that it's still the same working definition of, you know, that of the phrase or what we still, do we still think that this is kind of what that means? Oh, it is. Okay. Awesome. Just a quick check and balance.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know like when I say a poopy face walked in, or even when I say a wolf walked in, you know, there is a generalization that might need specific clarification. But I now kind of know the vibe that the person talking is bringing to the table. They're struggling with a coworker. They're struggling with an administrator. Okay, now I got the kind of the lay of the land. Now let's go after the specifics.
Well, I mean, anybody that's part of the Lisa Murphy universe knows exactly what you're talking about when you refer to laminating lady. Mm-hmm. And people take that terminology used in presentations. And I mean, they picture the person that works in their program who is that person. And so... Exactly. That bit
allows
of,
you to make a point.
Right? Yeah, that bit of universal truth that some of these terms carry with them is quite valuable as well.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, listeners,
what a chat team.
Listeners, don't go on tilt. There'll be another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill in a couple days. I don't know when this one comes out, but the next one will be out in a couple days. It just doesn't matter. Just wait a couple days. There'll be another one.
Always a couple days.
Yeah, because even if we're on tilt, we're going to keep making the podcasts. That's just the way it rolls. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing the show. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I forgot to say the part that this has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Bye-bye. That's the way you do it.
Bye-bye.
So there's another episode. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.